KPBS On Demand is supported by Latino Legacy Foundation, presenting their Storyteller Series, Reach for the Stars with Ellen Ochoa, the first Latina astronaut, former NASA director, and San Diego native, Sunday, June 29th. More at LatinoLegacyFoundation.org.
It's time for KPBS Midday Edition. Today we're talking about what's happening in arts and culture. We have some art activism and summer blockbusters. I'm Andrew Bracken, in for Jade Heinemann, with conversations that keep you informed, inspired, and make you think. Where art and activism meet along the U.S.-Mexico border during a contentious time.
We find that art is an important tool in our toolbox to be able to do activism, to be able to do mutual aid. It just allows us a different avenue to have conversations with people about these issues.
Then on Midday Movies, we take a look at some upcoming summer blockbusters as the original blockbuster celebrates its 50th anniversary. That's all ahead on Midday Edition. The AMBOS Project is one organization connecting both sides of the border through art and activism. AMBOS, which stands for Art Made Between Opposite Sides, first started in San Ysidro in 2016. They do a lot of work supporting LGBTQ+ migrants and asylum seekers in Tijuana. I'm here now with Natalie Godinez. She's the AMBOS Project's executive director. Natalie, welcome to Midday Edition.
Hi. Hello. How are you?
Great. Great to have you. So tell us more about AMBOS Project and its mission.
Yeah, of course. So AMBOS Project is a nonprofit organization. We just became a nonprofit organization last year, and we've been working together as an artist collective for the past 8 years, since 2016, as you mentioned. Originally, AMBOS was started by binational artist Tania Guiniga as a way to connect with the binational community and transborder community, as she was somebody who crossed the border every day to go to school when she was a child. And in that time that we've been working together, the project has shifted a lot. And we've done documentation of the whole U.S.-Mexico border. We've done a lot of mutual aid efforts to support migrants arriving in Tijuana and in other places along the border. And since 2020, we've been running a ceramics program called AMBOS Ceramics at three LGBTQ+ shelters, migrant shelters in Tijuana. And that's been the program that we've been running for the longest time. And we have been focusing on that and supporting the migrant community in that way through the arts. We do a lot of efforts on this side of the border to fundraise for our program and to inform the community about the issues that are happening both at the border and with immigrants all across our country here in the U.S. So half of our team is in Tijuana and half of our team is in LA. So we've been doing this work together to support migrants.
So what did you think was missing from the transborder art community when you first got involved with AMBOS?
Yeah, so one thing that we noticed when working directly with the transborder community was that we were forgetting a lot about the people who couldn't cross the border, right? So those people are also part of our community. So as we were traveling the border and we started talking to people about what were their thoughts about crossing the border, people were like, well, I can't cross or I don't want to cross, right? So then for us, then we really started thinking about how do we support the people who are staying on the other side, people who maybe are not able to cross for many reasons. And then also thinking about how do we talk to immigrants like us on this side of the border about those issues. So I think that was something that we realized was sort of missing that we've been addressing through the AMBOS Ceramics program.
I think, you know, it's fair to say art often goes hand in hand with activism. And often a lot of the art that gets, you know, created reflects the time when it's created. Can you talk a little bit about this intersection between art and activism? What drew you to kind of like melding those two together?
Yeah, so I think for all of us that have been part of the team in this, its different iterations, we already have sort of that drive to be doing activism and art. So I think for all of us, it's just really connected to our lived experience and really wanting to talk about issues that are difficult to talk about. And I think art is a way that we can address a lot of issues and talk to people that normally wouldn't want to talk about issues like immigration, issues like, you know, asylum seeking, and all of those things that we address through the art. So we find that art is an important tool in our toolbox to be able to do activism, to be able to do mutual aid. It just allows us a different avenue to have conversations with people about these issues.
And how are you thinking about the role of art in this current moment?
Yeah, I think that that's something that I think about a lot. I think art is playing a really important role in many different parts of the movement, right? In the movement to support migrants, to support immigrants here in the U.S., to everything that's happening with deportations. So I think there's different roles that artists are playing. Some of them have to do with just bringing awareness to issues, bringing awareness to the people affected so they can have information. Other ways that it's been happening is also through fundraising, which is something that we've done in the past a few times. So we create art that reflects the moment and then, you know, ask for support so we can pass that on to the people we're supporting. I also think it's playing a role in wellness and healing, especially for the people that we are working with at the shelters through the ceramics program. It's something that really supports their well-being, and having an activity to do that you're learning a skill and you're also processing through making these objects has been something that we've seen really impact the population we're serving.
So let's talk more about the art that's coming out of Ambos. Can you tell us more about the work and the students that are creating it?
Yeah, so we primarily have been focusing on ceramics, and like I mentioned, with the Ambos Ceramics Program. So this year specifically, they've been working on different projects. So one of them, the first one was they made different ceramic fruit. We were calling them sexy fruit. We did a whole installation for Freeze, the art fair in LA, which was to fundraise directly for the program. So that was one of the first projects that they worked on, which was more of a fun sort of way to engage people in a different way, like get people's attention to come and talk to us and you know, be part of it. And then they've also been working on some projects that, for example, a collection of Sgraffito vases where they're carving in their stories into vases that they've been creating with the teachers at the shelters. So our two teachers, Juan and Stefania, who teach the classes, they've been kind of talking to them about their migration stories. And then they've been coming up with symbols, with text and things to inscribe onto different vases. And then they also have been working on, we in the past got a donation of a 3D printing machine for ceramics. So we've been making use of this equipment to create busts that are then changed by all the students. And then they're adding in like a self-portrait and creating their self-portraits through these busts. So that's some of the projects that they've been working on this year. And we have a variety of students from different countries, from Mexico, El Salvador, Guatemala, Honduras, Venezuela, Russia, Chile. So you can, Haiti. So you can see that we have students from all over who are coming to these shelters. And I would say the majority of our students are trans. A lot of them are, you know, coming and seeking refuge because they are persecuted in their home countries or they don't feel accepted. So that's been something that we've been able to support through these classes.
Can you talk about what some of the unique challenges that some of your students, you know, LGBTQ plus migrants and asylum seekers specifically, are commonly facing?
Yeah, so there's obviously a variety of challenges, right? One of them is there are specific LGBTQ plus shelters because it's a safety issue, right? We want the people who run these shelters think about how to provide these services so that they're not in the mainstream shelters where they're maybe facing discrimination. So that's one big issue that's, you know, been supported through this. Another thing is right now it's not possible to be seeking asylum in the U.S. So a lot of people they can't obtain any more appointments to do this process. So a lot of people have been, you know, going back home, returning to where they came from, or a lot of times, you know, taking the really difficult decision to cross through the desert, which is really dangerous. So there's been definitely a big challenge with that. The asylum process has been paused, essentially, where nobody is able to seek asylum. And especially now, as we know, with the current, you know, legislation being passed against trans people here in the U.S., we know that that's also becoming another layer that is then becoming an impossibility for them to be able to apply to asylum.
How has art helped, you know, the students process everything that's going on? Like you mentioned, it's not just the pause in asylum and all that's happening with migration along our border. Also, many of your students are impacted by the Trump administration's anti-trans policies. What role is art playing in helping them navigate this moment?
Well, I think that it's become an outlet for them. You know, they go to these weekly classes and get to create something, be in community with each other, think about things they want to create. You know, we've also supported them through one of the shelters specifically working. They're working on a pride like float. So that's something that's not part of the ceramics program, but we're supporting with that too, because we know that that's important to highlight joy, to highlight, you know, self-expression, even at times like this, right? So I think it's been really important for them to be able to still continue having these art classes. So yeah, it's been a great avenue for them. We also do, you know, we have a partnership with a ceramic studio in Tijuana called Lustre Studio. And they are the ones who fire all of our pieces. So they've been able to go on 2 field trips to go and make art at the art studio there, which has been also just another opportunity to, you know, get out of the routine, try something new. And we've had students in the past who've gotten really into ceramics and who have come, actually were able in the past to come to the U.S. and they're still continuing to do some of those projects. So it seems like it's been a really healing experience for everyone.
And you have a couple of events coming up to celebrate Pride Month. You mentioned the Pride Float earlier, and actually this weekend you're launching an exhibit in Tijuana. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so we're going to be part of an event this Friday, which is happening in Tijuana at Bujasan Cinema, which is in downtown Tijuana. So they're doing a pop-up exhibition, and our students are going to be presenting some of their vases they created, and some other ceramics works, like some coral reefs. And then we'll have some other students there talking about the work that they created, how they created it, as well as our teacher, Juan Villavicencio, who's our teacher with the ceramics program. He will also be there talking to everybody about the projects. So yeah, that will be, like I said, on Friday, June 27th, they're going to be presenting from 7 to 7:30, but it's a whole Pride event that will be happening throughout the day, and then they'll be presenting from 7 to 7:30.
And people can actually support the students by buying some of their artwork too, right?
Yes. So we have some of the artwork that they was created earlier this year for the fruits that I mentioned earlier. They're on our website. We just put up a shop on our website, and we'll be updating and adding more works specifically after this exhibition. We always ask the students, right, what stuff they want to keep, what stuff they want to, you know, donate back, so we can continue supporting them. So we will be continuing to add some of these works. And if people go in person to the event in Tijuana, there will be some merch that we've created that will be for sale as well. And 100% of all the funds raised go back to our programs.
And finally, what's your hope for the AMBOS project going forward and for the migrant communities you're serving with this project?
Yeah, I mean, I'm hoping that in the future, we can continue doing these types of projects in an environment that is more welcoming, in an environment where we're supporting people through their movement and migration, and not thinking about, you know, the ways where they can't freely move through spaces and countries. So yeah, you know, that's a really big hope, but we hope that we can continue just working with different populations and different people, expanding to also work with our community here on the side of the border. We've done some activations and some workshops in LA and San Diego in the past, and we've had really positive response. So that's something that we also are thinking of, especially now with everything happening with the deportations and the ICE raids, is how can we also, you know, bring those types of programs and some healing spaces to our community here, our immigrant community here in LA and then in San Diego as well.
And art is such a beautiful way for us to connect with others across borders and with whatever divisions or walls are kind of between us too, don't you think?
Yes, 100%. And that's something that we've seen before with other projects we've done. And we've been able to, you know, like I mentioned before, have conversations and really talk to different people about migration. And then also reminding some people that, you know, that even their ancestors have migrated and how we are all connected. And yeah, it's a beautiful way to build bridges across different communities.
I've been speaking with Natalie Godinez, Executive Director at AMBOS Project. Natalie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And to learn more about the exhibit we talked about and the artist's work, we'll be linking to the AMBOS website at kpbs.org/midday. Coming up, we hear about some of the highly anticipated movies of the summer as the first ever summer blockbuster celebrates its 50th birthday. You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition.
KPBS On Demand is supported by Splitero, helping homeowners pay off debt or for home improvements by offering streamlined access to your home's equity with no additional monthly payments or new debt. Splitero provides a lump sum payment in exchange for a share of your home's future value. Learn more at Splitero.com.
You're listening to KPBS Midday Edition. I'm Andrew Bracken, in for Jade Heidman. Summer is officially in full swing, and Hollywood studios are hoping to find traction at the box office with their big tentpole releases. Sinners and the kid-friendly A Minecraft Movie, Lilo and Stitch, and How to Train Your Dragon have already connected with audiences this year. But some of the biggest releases are yet to come, and our midday movie critics are ready to give you a preview. Once again, we welcome back KPBS cinema junkie Beth Accomando and Movie Walla's podcaster Yazdi Pithavala. Welcome back to you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So before we begin looking at this year's summer movies, there's a big 50th anniversary we want to mention that's worth honoring first. That's music that gave me fear of going swimming for many years after seeing that. Beth, explain why Steven Spielberg's Jaws is important to remember.
Yes, so this opened on June 20th, 1975, and it changed the landscape for movies. The studio invested a bunch of money in marketing and promoting it early on. There were toys and there were things, you know, connected to the movie, and it just hit a staggering amount at the box office. It was one of the highest grossing movies in history. So the thing about this was the studios realized that if they packaged something to be a success for the summer, to like really engage the audience, that it could pay off big. And it could pay off in ways that they hadn't seen before. And Star Wars then, a couple years later, perfected this, even advancing the release date. So this came out May 25th in 1977, but they really managed to grab the summer audience and extend that summer. So yeah, we're living in this post-Jaws world.
Yossi, what sticks out to you about Jaws 50 years on now?
Yeah, as Beth mentioned, we forget that before the release of Jaws, there was no such thing as a summer blockbuster, right? So right now, you know, Will Smith movies in the 90s, whatever, Jurassic Park movies, we look forward to a summer blockbuster. But Jaws was the first film where proactively the studios decided to kind of do this marketing blitz and kind of get merchandising out and really push the movie in a big way. One of which was to release the movie simultaneously in a very large number of theaters. The previous mentality had been that if you did not have a very good film, that's when you would release it very quickly in a lot of theaters before word got around that it wasn't such a good movie, so you could make your money quickly. But after Jaws, obviously now we have these very wide releases. So everything we see in terms of the Hollywood blockbuster template kind of started with Jaws.
And I guess along with all the common experiences we've come used to with movie franchises, I don't know, one of the downsides, I guess, would be the Jaws sequels, which I won't tell you on the story of seeing Jaws 3D, for example, or something like that. But opening this weekend is a film Warner Brothers hopes will score big, and that is F1. This is the Brad Pitt vehicle in more ways than one. Here's the trailer.
Some people look at Sonny Hayes. They see a guy who lives in a van, a gambling junkie who missed his shot. The best that never was. But I see possibility.
So Yazdi, I did see the trailer to this in the theater, and I gotta admit, I'm sold. What do you think? Is this gonna be a box office hit?
It has all the makings of a massive hit. It's been very strongly pushed in both the F1 circuit as well as at Apple TV for months now. And, you know, you may find your faults with the movie, but it is expertly crafted. It's shot on location at Formula One racetracks around the world. And Joseph Kosinski, who has directed the film, does the same thing with Brad Pitt's character in F1 as he did with Tom Cruise in Top Gun Maverick. We see the same thing for the Brad Pitt character. He is mythic and he's larger than life, and kind of that appeals to the fan base. I really like the movie, even though towards the end the film tips over a little bit into too much schmaltz, but even then it's so beautifully constructed. It has an amazing cast of Kerry Condon, newcomer Damson Idris, Javier Bardem, who round off a fun cast, but it's a very, very polished product.
Beth, what are your thoughts?
Well, it's sort of a vanity project for Brad Pitt, but he is an incredibly smart person and he plays to all his strengths. So it's really, you know, it's a star vehicle and it works well as that. I mean, he proves that he does have this kind of like star power to hold a film like this together. And for me, you know, the story, the characters, they all feel very familiar, like the machinations of this plot hit a lot of tropes that people are going to recognize. But what it did so well and what hooked me is the driving. I love gearhead films. For me, George Miller is the master with all the Mad Max films. He knows where to put a camera. He knows how to make you feel the speed. And I loved how this film did get you in the driver's seat and gave you a sense of like how fast they're going, how close they are to the other cars. And the one thing that it did that I really had never thought about, you know, to me, racing is about just going fast. And this really played up this idea like, no, there's strategy, there's a team working together to try and win. It's elements of it that I hadn't really seen played up before in movies, but I just loved how this film moved. And that's a combination of the editing, the stunt work, the camera work, and all that just came together to make you feel like the wind breezing by you every time you got in the driver's seat.
Well, that's exactly how I felt just in the trailer. And it does ring out to me. It's like a movie that I'd kind of go out to see in the theater and not just streaming on my TV at home. Beth, in recent years, it's not summer without superheroes. So what's on tap this summer when it comes to that?
So I was not originally looking forward to the new Superman film. I mean, for me, I grew up with Christopher Reeve as Superman. He was perfection. Those Richard Donner films were amazing. And I was very hesitant about this one. Then the trailer came out, and I will confess, putting Crypto the dog in there was definitely a heart tugger for me. This is James Gunn, who jumped ship from Marvel to DC. And I will say, based on some of the clips and trailers, I am letting myself feel hopeful about this one. So here's some of the trailer. Maybe it'll get you excited.
Superman.
Miss Lane.
Recently, you've come under a lot of fire for what some might.
It's a lot of fire.
It's a lot. Today, the Secretary of Defense said he was going to look into your actions. That's funny.
My actions? I stopped a war.
Maybe.
Not maybe. I did.
In effect, you illegally entered a country.
This is how you're going to be?
I'm not the one being interviewed, Superman. Did you consult with the president?
No.
You seemingly acting as a representative of
I
the United States.
I wasn't representing anybody except for me.
Around the
and doing good.
I would question myself in the same situation and consider the consequences.
People were going to die!
So what I liked about the trailer was it seems like it's returning Superman to being someone more heroic and less dark, less troubled. Like, he stands for truth, justice, and the American way in the way he did in the comics. And I just feel like it's refreshing from what we've been getting in some of the more recent DC films, where they seem to have this somberness and heaviness, a lot of this from the Zack Snyder universe, which I know he has his fanboys who will defend him till the end. But I feel like the change of tone and pace in this one is promising, and I'm going to be hopeful.
Yeah, Steve, what about you? I mean, for me, still on the top of the heap, Dark Knight trilogy for me. So I kind of like the dark approach. But what are your thoughts on this new Superman?
Andrew, I'm as much a fan of the Dark Knight trilogy that Christopher Nolan did. But I think the Nolanization of the superhero genre has become a little exhausting. It has flipped over into too much darkness, too much brooding, too much self-importance. There's a place for it, but it seems like every superhero movie kind of follows that same track. And I think we need to go back to that Saturday morning giddiness of, you know, superhero cartoons. And I'm really hopeful that this version from James Gunn has more of the sensibility of that original 1978 Richard Donner film, including some of the sequels. So I want us to feel kind of silly and childlike and giddy again when watching it. And I'm hoping this movie brings that.
So another superhero film coming this summer is The Fantastic Four. Where does that fit into your...
So every time somebody mentions the Fantastic Four, it's like a cursed history. I mean, honestly, there was an old 92 and was supposed to come out in 94, but Roger Corman was handed the project of making a Fantastic Four film. Apparently, it was never designed to be released. It was meant to just hold on to the copyright. But it was basically, it was made to disappear, which made fans all the more hungry for what it was. So that film never appeared. There's a bootleg out that a lot of fans do hold kind of dear to their heart. Then we have two horrible franchise attempts at the Fantastic Four. And now we have a fourth one, maybe instead of three, four will be the charm. This has Pedro Pascal, who I do adore. I'm not sure he can carry a whole film. I haven't been wildly impressed by any of the trailers, but yes, we are going to be getting a Fantastic Four film to test the waters one more time to see if anybody can pull this off. I don't know why it's so hard, but we'll see.
Yossi, you mentioned kind of wanting to go back to the Saturday morning cartoon version of Super. Does this look like it's going to hit that?
I don't know. I have my doubts because I think for whatever reason, this particular pocket of superhero lore has never translated well to the screen. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's... I really don't understand what the reason is. But in spite of Pedro Pascal, in spite of Vanessa Kirby, who's also going to be one of the Fantastic Four, I have my doubts. So I'm going to be walking into the theater very, very slowly, very gingerly, counting my steps.
Well, moving on now to comedies. That's also part of the summer blockbuster landscape. Are there any comedies that you're looking forward to this summer, Beth?
Again, my gut reaction when I heard Naked Gun was going to be remade was like, why mess with perfection? Stupidity, but absolute perfection. You know, Leslie Nielsen took a serious career, lifelong career, you know, doing cops and TV shows and turned it around to mock himself. It was brilliant. Now we have Liam Neeson taking it on, and I have to say I was a little hesitant, but the trailer made me laugh. So here's the trailer.
Once you kill a man for revenge, there's no going back. A voice in your head saying over and over, "That was awesome."
Who are you?
Drebin. Detective Frank Drebin. Hi, Daddy. It's me, Frank Jr. Love you.
Okay, so Liam Neeson, just like Leslie Nielsen, seems to be having a great time poking fun at his own image. You can't see it on radio, but there are some sight gags in this that do pay homage to the original Police Squad and Naked Gun. So the big question is, can it sustain it for like 90 minutes and keep up the pace? And if they can pull it off, it could be fun.
Yeah, I'm with you, Beth. It's going to be tough. Yazdi, what's on your radar for summer comedies?
I have a very dark comedy to recommend, and it's the film The Roses, which is coming out this summer. And the film is ostensibly a remake of the 1989 film The War of the Roses, which was directed by Danny DeVito. This time, Benedict Cumberbatch and Olivia Colman take on the roles that were originally played by Michael Douglas and Kathleen Turner. And the film is about an affluent couple who launch into a ridiculously out-of-bounds war with each other as a consequence of the falling out of their impending divorce. I really hope that this particular remake is able to retain the cruelly dark humor of the original film. And I hope they don't give in and try to make it too schmaltzy or cutesy and just really go for the dark, bloody underside of the original film. And here's a clip from the new movie, The Roses. You
blow up too. We are done.
I say when we're done.
I just want the house. I built it.
Oh, you're not having the house.
We want everything. And he walks out of here with his face still attached. Right, Bruno?
Wow.
Yazdi, what about, you know, personal favorites that may not fit into that blockbuster category?
So there are two smaller films that I'm really looking forward to this summer. The first one is Eddington from Ari Aster, who made Hereditary as well as Midsommar and many other films. And this movie is based on a fictional New Mexico town of the same name, where a battle of wills ensues between opposing ideologies during the COVID pandemic. So it's very topical, and it has an amazing cast. Joaquin Phoenix is here, Pedro Pascal is here, as is Austin Butler and Emma Stone. So looking forward to it. Another movie that's gotten great reviews out of film festivals earlier this year is the movie Together from first-time writer-director Michael Shanks. And it's about a couple played by Dave Franco and Alison Brie, who are married in real life, who move to the country and encounter some sort of an unnatural force that alters their life and their bodies. So this movie is really dipping into body horror. The trailer looks fantastic. It's coming with a lot of fanfare and expectation, and I'm looking forward to it.
Wow, Together. I gotta check that one out. Beth, what about you? Like, away from the blockbusters.
Well, and also, I think we should send up a flare for Yazdi recommending body horror.
Yes.
But yes, I have a couple too. There's one, Honey Don't, which is a solo Coen brother film. This is Ethan and his real life partner and creative partner, Trisha Cook. They did Drive Away Dolls together, which I really enjoyed, and mm-hmm. I felt like it didn't get the traction it deserved. And they are now pairing up again. And this new film called Honey Don't seems to have the same kind of tone and style as the Drive Away Dolls film did. And it also features Margaret Qualley in the lead. So here's a little taste of the film, and it really does have the same, like, you can feel the cadence and the beat that are almost the same as the other film.
Why is a private investigator looking into a traffic fatality?
What can you tell me about?
Do you drink?
Heavily. It's a point of pride.
Should you and I discuss this over a drink?
Tuesdays I dry out.
Today's Wednesday.
Today is Tuesday.
Spooky. I really am looking forward to that. I love his work with his brother or by himself. I think both of them have done incredible stuff together and apart. So Honey Don't is on my list. And then against my better judgment, I am looking forward to Jurassic World Rebirth because I want to see more dinosaurs on the big screen. I really don't care about the human beings at all. Maybe this film will change my mind, but all I can say is I hope the dinosaurs' screen time outweigh the humans. And if it does, then I will probably be happy.
That's one I wish the Santee Drive-In was still open to go see, because that's yes. one. There's certain blockbusters I reserve only for drive-ins, but sadly that.
That needs D-Box too, because when the dinosaurs step in, you should feel your whole seat rumble.
Okay, yeah. Well, I want to thank our Midday Movies critics, Beth Accomando and Yazdi Pathavala, for this summer movie preview. Beth, Yazdi, thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you, Andrew.
That's our show for today. I'm Andrew Bracken. KPBS Midday Edition airs on KPBS FM weekdays at noon, again at 8 p.m. You can find past episodes at kpbs.org or wherever you listen. Thanks again for listening. Have a great day.
KPBS On Demand is supported by the San Diego County Toyota Dealers, presenting the new 2025 Camry with refined design and performance. Visit your local Toyota dealer to learn more about all the features the new 2025 Camry offers. The San Diego County Toyota Dealers. We make it easy.